Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to Getting Savvy in Health, Wealth, and Beauty. Important to note that everything is for entertainment purposes only. Please do speak and meet with a financial advisor before making any investment decisions. And also, please meet and speak with your GP before making any health or beauty decisions.
Melissa, you and I are in different places. I think people can probably see maybe some mountains behind me. And I've got my ski stuff on, partly on, and ski hair. It's very bad from yesterday. It was snowing. It was so bad. I mean, it was great snow. Very, very challenging. But then your hair gets all crimpy, crimpy.
Oh, there was no worse ski hair than the time I met you after Cloud Nine, where they spray the champagne and my hair was full of champagne. Do you remember that?
Yeah. You know, that picture just popped up in my phone the other day. It's hysterical. Like yesterday.
Yeah. That was so funny.
That was awesome. That was so good. And where are you?
Nice. So I'm in Long Beach, California. That's why my background's on Bloor. I'm in a hotel room getting ready to go on a cruise. Yeah. So it's spring break coming up. So we're going on a Royal Caribbean cruise with the kids. First time.
Oh my God. Are they so excited?
They are so excited because the ship has these two giant water slides that go all around it. And there's so many activities. So I think there's going to be a lot to do. I'm a little bit like apprehensive.
Why?
Well, just that many people on a boat on there for the week, never having done it before. You know, it's just something new, but we're going here because my parents are meeting us. And so the cruise actually goes through Mexico. So Puerto Cabo, St. Lucas, Mazatlan. So hopefully we'll get some good weather.
Is Adam excited about this or is he like, oh my God?
He was a hard no. This is how he starts off all his negotiations. So if ever you ask Adam for anything, the answer will be no.
Okay.
And then you move from a place of no. So it was hard no, not going on a cruise, no way. I don't want to get Norwalk and
Norwalk virus.
He's afraid of getting, you know, and he's like, there's so many people and I'm not going. I started sending him some YouTube videos of the cruise, started showing him what the kids could do, started showing him some, look, you know, there's an escape room, there's shows, there's casino,
Wait, he won't want to escape the escape room.
Yeah, exactly. Stay in the escape room. And then that there's like the kids have their own, they go off and be in like a kid's area so we can have some of our own time. Then I found the flights on point. I had to do the tactics of getting there, the negotiation strategy. And so now we are going.
I can't believe how much work you had to do to get to that.
I know.
It's a lot
right?
of work.
Exhausting.
What's wrong with just saying
exhausting.
Yes?
I know. I think like the hair toss should have worked, but.
Yes. Yes. Practice the hair toss more.
Yeah, seriously.
By the way, I noticed your hot, hot, hot pink nails. And the first thing I said to you was, I bet Rebecca has the exact same nails as you, because that's what you guys do.
Yeah. So normally we would do that. She begged me. These kids want to get these like tips now, like the gel tips, and they start early. And so for special occasions, so I said, fine. So I let her get them. So she found this picture where it was actually French tips, where each French was a different pastel color. So she didn't get matching. She got them. And then lo and behold, within one day, they're off because she's like, I can't do anything with these nails. I'm like, you're never getting them ever again. It was the biggest waste of money ever.
By the way, how old is she?
12.
Right.
So shame on me for indulging her in that. Wait.
I just think it's so smart that she's like, I can't do anything with these nails. I mean, yeah. I still have these nails.
Yeah.
But I haven't given up.
Try putting on the backing of an earring. Impossible.
Yeah, right. Right.
You know, you can't, but I've gotten good at typing and, you know, it's fun.
Yeah. So speaking of being on a cruise, what we're going to talk about today is obviously we're going to talk about the impact that the tariffs have had on the markets. If anybody's been watching, they've been down dramatically. They're actually not too bad today, but a lot of money has been evaporated from markets. And when I say markets, these are stocks. And if people think that they don't own them, they do. They own them in a pension fund that they might have. They might own them in a corporate pension fund. They might own them in mutual funds. So we'll talk about that. I also wanted to, you know, take a look at a few things that you've looked at and asked me to look at, which is owning small cap stocks. I thought we'd do a bit of an update on Tesla. Also, because you're on a Royal Caribbean cruise, I looked at that stock because there's been some really interesting moves in the consumer discretionary stocks. So think airlines, think retail, think cruise lines and hotels. And so then you have to sit there and say, well, is that an opportunity? So I also wanted to take a look at Berkshire Hathaway as well, because we've talked a little bit about that. And what's on your agenda?
Okay, so a study that I saw that zinc can increase the longevity of how long your Botox lasts. So for people that do Botox, this is big news. So we'll chat about that. I also want to talk about some more serious health topics that have been in the news. So the measles outbreak in the US continues to be ongoing. So we can talk about what that means and what we need to be aware of. Also, that's been a lot in the news about the Pope being hospitalized for a long time with double pneumonia. So some people have asked me, well, what does double pneumonia mean? And am I at risk? And so we can talk about that. And then a study I saw on emulsifiers in food and why they may be harmful for our health and how to find out if we're consuming them.
Right, which is so interesting because I think there's a lot of emulsifiers in foods that we don't even know about. So we'll get into that. But why don't we start with the, topic du jour, which, front page of the Wall Street Journal today. You have to kind of follow this constantly and link the dots. That's the kind of environment we're in right now, which of course, as we thought at the beginning of the week, that President Trump would in fact impose tariffs on Canada and Mexico. And then we found out yesterday that there's going to be a pause in these tariffs until April the 2nd. At the end of the day, when you're looking at the markets, what does this mean? And again, when I say markets, I mean the economy. I mean businesses, small businesses. I mean everything. And it really just means that the policy volatility is weighing on decision making. It's weighing on consumers. Consumers have to sit there and wait and wonder, should I make this purchase? Should I go on another cruise? Because if the economy, and this is the concern, that tariffs are a taxation and a taxation limits the amount of money you have in your pocket because you're obviously spending more on these items, these goods that are being imported with an extra tax on them. So it's really leading to, perhaps a pause in the consumer and the consumer sentiment. And you are absolutely seeing that in some of the retail companies in the States that have just reported their earnings and have more of a dim outlook.
It's just confusion. It's just everybody's confused. So how do you know what you can spend on if you don't even, it's just people are just, I think, just a bit frozen, you
That's
know?
right.
And the markets are just like, someone described it as like bipolar or manic depressive. Like I don't even look at it right now. It's like he says this, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down. I'm just ignoring the drama a little bit because I don't think anybody really knows what's going on. Like, there's going to be tariffs and there's not. Then there are. Now they're paused again. Why are they paused again? What's going to be different on April 2nd? We've already figured it out that it really doesn't have anything to do with the fentanyl crisis. I mean, it may have a little bit, or maybe that's just an excuse.
I
So
think it
what's
has a
going
lot to do with the fentanyl crisis. I do believe that.
on?
But I think there's,
Don't you
I
think
think.
that's just an excuse to be able to use it as a reason that they can go
Well,
against NAFTA?
I think that there's like maybe a three or four pronged approach to this, right? So I think fentanyl is one, and I think that they have in fact increased the amount of seizures for fentanyl. So I think that that is one. I do believe that they want reciprocity in tariffs. As an example, the amount of tariffs that the United States imposes on certain countries is far less than what is imposed on them. And this comes from World Trade Organization and things that have been agreed upon many, many years ago. But at some point they feel or felt that that is not what is good in America's long-term interest. So I just want to say that I think from a long-term interest, they are trying to increase manufacturing, increase jobs, increase investments into the United States. That's their long-term approach. The issue is we've got this short-term policy volatility that, to your point, we're trying to figure out. And from a near-term perspective, what does it do? Probably increases inflation and decreases growth. I have read from some, very well-respected strategists, economists on Wall Street and Bay Street that this is a, stepping back, it's a transition period for how the government of the United States wants to run the US, meaning as opposed to just flooding the market with money and easy rates and monetary policy and fiscal spending, They want to make it more like a business. And that's why you're seeing Doge come into effect. So it's in this transition period that is so difficult. And to your point, it is confusing. And what do we
Confusing.
do?
And like when I look at it, I think I understand the goal, and it seems like they're doing this for the long-term gain on the US. For long-term
Correct.
gain, you might have to feel some short-term pain. But I don't think that any president that's only in term for 4 years wants to be known as the person that put the country through short-term pain so some other president can experience the long-term gain. So it's like, if the economy is going to go down, if the market's going to go down, if people are going to feel hurt, you want to be that president? Like, I feel like that's against Trump's ego to be that person. So it seems like I get what they're doing, but it's like, he may want to put those tariffs on, and then all of a sudden, if he does it and doesn't pause it, the markets are going to go down, the economy's going to go down, we're going to be not happy with him. So I don't know. It just seems very confusing, like I said, and I don't really see what's going to change in 1 month to April 2nd than today.
Understood. Well, what were you going to say?
Yeah, it almost seems like a way for people to be like, oh, he's going to put tariffs in. Okay, the market's going to go down. Bye. Because you know that next day he's going to say, oh, we canceled them again. So now you quickly made money. Like, I don't know. It just seems not totally understanding what's going on there. And it seems like our government's getting pretty frustrated too. If you hear Trudeau and Ford, their approach back at him is like, I think Ford said, well, we're not pausing ours. Like, I think he's staying the course, right?
He is apparently staying the course and is going to impose the electricity restrictions
Yeah, like
starting on Monday.
I think they're getting frustrated with the game playing. And also, like, they took all the American liquor off the shelves. It's such a now they're gonna go up, put it all back on to go take it all off again. It's like they're making us run around like, it's like a game. Anyway, that's just how I, as a non-expert strategist, I'm just saying, like, because the average person sort of sees it,
Absolutely.
I haven't known what to do, and I haven't traded, or I haven't done anything with any of this information. Like, I haven't. Based on the tariffs or no tariffs, I haven't made any changes to my portfolio. I don't know if you have.
Well, so interestingly, the other day, so I guess there's a couple of things here. One is that the other day the market was down significantly, right? The Dow was down 800 points. You saw bank stocks down 6%. You saw some of the consumer discretion names down 10, 12%. Those are really big moves. Maybe, you see 1 to 2, 3% moves. So these were outsized moves. So to your point about what do you do, there are many money. So again, like I used to be on the institutional desk. So my clients, it wasn't like I had a book of like retail wealth clients. The institutions keep their money. I give them good ideas to trade on through the big investment bank that supports that. And if they like the ideas and I do well for them in helping them with, research analysts and investment banking, then they trade through us and that's how you make your money. All to say, when you cover these institutional money managers and hedge funds, they have different beliefs. Some of them are definitely doing this, what you call like, sharpening your pencil and looking at the names that you've wanted to own, but the valuations were too high. So there's those group of people. And then there are others, which is a little bit, so that's what I did. And I did buy a stock, which I'll tell you about. And then there are other big PMs and hedge fund managers that would say, I'm not catching a falling knife. So it's interesting because the market was down beginning of the week, then it was up, and then it was down again. And now it's still down, but it's not, falling. So your view is I'm stepping back and I'm not going to catch a falling knife.
My view is I'm not changing my plan. If I'm doing this dollar cost average, I'm just continuing with my plan that every 3 months I invest and I just ignore everything and I just hope it all averages out over the long term.
Well, and it does because you're young, right?
Yeah. Well, am I? I like that. Yes, in terms of like my potential years left like in the market and investing.
Yeah. But when you say you're a dollar cost averaging every 3 months, what is specifically are you doing? Are you buying the same stocks or what are you doing?
So I've had a plan where I buy ETFs. So I buy, like the American, talked about it, VFE, whatever, like the S&P 500. I buy the TSX. I buy international. I buy some bonds. And then I usually pick a stock or pick something that I've been looking at just for fun
Interesting.
and to, yeah.
And is
So
it automatic? Is that
that's pretty
automatic?
automatic. Yeah. And I just set it and I often think of this analogy that I invest like I cook. Not often. Okay. Very simply. And I set it and forget it. Like it's like the air fryer method of
So
investing.
brilliant.
Yeah. Thanks.
But how specifically are you doing it, like automatically?
I just set a calendar date in my calendar and then,
Okay, and then you go
oh yeah,
do
so it's
it.
not super automatic. No, it's not done like
Okay.
that for me, but I just, that's the date and then I go in
Okay.
and that's what I do.
Wow. That's
It's very
so great.
different. It's a very passive way of investing that I think if you're not an expert and if it's, you're not in, you know, so it's a very passive way, but it also allows me to also have some, because by picking that individual stock, I am still looking at things, thinking
Sure
about
you are.
companies, thinking about things. But it also forces you not to be like too emotional about it. And,
Yeah.
you
Yeah.
know, everybody's panicking and you still stay with your plan.
Yeah, absolutely. So just because we're talking about, you didn't buy anything, I did, and I probably knew it was too early, but I told you I was going to buy, I put an order in to buy Delta stock because I was reading a research report, and this report has about 80% upside to its price target because Delta obviously got hit so dramatically. And then adding on because of the crash, and then adding on top of that, these consumer discretionary oriented names, if we've got tariffs and higher inflation, how many people are going to be able to afford to fly as much? So we've actually seen over the past month. So I'm just looking at this, and anybody can look at this, right? You go onto Yahoo Finance, you type in American Airlines or Delta Airlines, it'll pop up, the stock will pop up with a chart. And then it'll say, do you want to look at this on a 5 month basis, year to date, 1 month, max 10 years? And then you can see what the stock's done over time. And so I'm just looking at stocks as I look at them today on a 1 month basis, just to see how much damage has been done. As an example, American Airlines is down by about 26%, Delta down by 24%. So that's why for me, I'm kind of looking at some of these stocks when they've been hit, and I bought it. I'm down a little bit, but it is what it is.
Why do some people, I've heard some people say, don't buy airline stocks.
They're very cyclical. This is the first airline stock I've ever bought. They're not, I don't think operationally they're easy to manage. They are also influenced by the price of oil, which I actually, like right now, oil's been coming down, so that'll end up being a bit of a tailwind. There's also different airlines that have had different strategies by adding more premium seats that they can charge more for. That's what I believe Delta has been doing, and the advantage with that is they're able to offer a little bit more of an offering to a younger cohort that maybe then will like flying with Delta, get their points with Delta. And then as they progress through life, they'll be buying the business class seats. So there's all these different strategies. But yes, it's a very cyclical business, as you can imagine. It does depend on the economy. And it depends on business travel as well, let alone luxury spending, right?
Yeah, we landed in Toronto at Pearson the day before that Delta flight crashed and flipped over. How wild is that? Can you imagine? Just like upside down. You know, it's funny because not too long before that, I thought, ah, what's the point of wearing a seatbelt on a plane? Oh, there's a plane. You could
Alyssa,
have fallen out of the seat. You got to have that seat belt on. You got to listen to that safety
safety
talk,
person.
you know? It was, that was just crazy that that happened. And, but you know, I just flew here to Cap. This is the first time I've flown since that
Oh,
crash. And we flew Porter. And I have to tell you, it was an amazing experience. Now Porter's flying to LA from Toronto.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. And it was like, if, like, first of all, they give you free Wi-Fi, food. It was so, like, to be able to have on the plane 5 hours of Wi-Fi, I got so much work done.
Wow.
Was the flight plan went by like this. It was just a really, it was a really good
Yeah. I
plan.
know I've flown it. It's a very, very, very pleasant experience.
Yeah, it was.
And
And
that comes from someone who doesn't like to fly. So,
there you go.
there you go. But anyway, so yeah, so I ended up buying,
Okay, so
and I'm
American. So
still
you went with
looking.
American over
I did.
so I have to tell you something interesting about American, and again, fact check me, but
Yeah.
was reading something, some study that said, when stocks get kicked out of the S&P 500, so you know we talked about the S&P 500, it's a basket of the top market cap
500.
500 stocks in the US. So when someone's no longer in that 500, they're no longer in that ETF of the S&P 500. But they looked at the ones that just got kicked out end up over the course of the next year performing better than the S&P 500 does. And I don't know if that's because it's like what the reason. And so American Airlines, I believe, is one of those stocks that's no longer in the S&P 500. But it just recently got kicked out, which, if you look at the data, might imply that it could. Yeah, I don't know. Anyhow, it was an interesting article. See if you can find it later.
Yeah.
And
I will fact check that. So, and one of the reasons why they kicked out is because they're not, performing the way they should be within the top 500 companies or what have you. So there are these rotations. And what happens though is when they're not part of an index anymore, right? Like an ETF that represents the index, they don't. There's selling pressure, right? Because the index is supposed to, the ETF that represents the index is supposed to represent the index. So they sell those shares. So sometimes there can be undue pressure on those stocks that get kicked out. And maybe what you're talking about, but again, I'll have to look at this, is a rebound because it was, too much selling pressure.
So they took, because they got kicked out, they get too undervalued and then they end up
Right.
better. So just
That's
looking
it.
at that fact alone, if you want to look at the ones that just, they tend
Yeah.
to perform historically better over the course of the next year.
That's interesting. I've not really ever looked at that,
I don't know
but
how I accumulate these
I don't know.
factoids in my brain.
Well, you know
I
how
can't remember what I had for dinner yesterday, but I can remember these articles that I, yeah.
Actually, I have an interesting factoid that I'm going to bring up just because we'll round up the tariff conversation. But this is interesting, I think. In 1890, in the United States, the McKinley Act came into effect. And that was where they put 49.5% tariffs on imported goods.
Okay.
49%, not 25, not 10, 49. And it's interesting because it was President Harrison at the time. He did not explicitly campaign for Canada's annexation, but his tariff policy aligned with this kind of North American dominance. So they ended up having to reverse it because it didn't do well. But I just thought that that was an interesting factoid.
Yeah, it is. That's crazy amount of tariff. I mean, that's really basically saying we're not trading. We're not sharing
Yeah.
when you have to pay
Yeah.
that much of a tax, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was rescinded in 1894. So it went in 1890, rescinded in 1894.
Okay.
And here we are again. Anyway, but let's get to zinc and Botox.
Yeah. So they did, and this was actually a good study. So we've talked about different studies before. Some of them have more meat than others. And one thing we look at when something's a good study is a double-blind placebo-controlled trial, which means that people don't know which they're getting, if they're getting the drug or if they're getting the placebo, and they're comparing two different groups. So what they did is a good study, and they gave people Botox, okay, so botulinum toxin. And in one of the groups, they gave them 50 milligrams of zinc citrate. And the other one, they gave 5 milligrams of, or 10 milligrams of zinc glycinate. And then they gave just lactulose or some, just something that was just placebo, like not related. And then
Okay.
they did the Botox on the patient. And then they asked the people to rate subjectively how good their Botox lasted, like how strong it was and how long it lasted. And they found that the people that took the 50 milligrams of zinc reported subjectively that it seemed to really take good effect. It was strong and it lasted 30% longer duration. And these people didn't know they were what they were on. It's not like they were like, because sometimes if you know what you've taken, you're more likely to say, oh yeah, it worked. It's like a placebo effect. People didn't know what they were taking. And they found
Oh.
that people on the 50 milligrams of zinc, their Botox 30% longer. Typically, the average length of Botox lasts about 3 months. Most people go to get their Botox done 4 times a year. But that means this is giving you a whole extra month. That's a big price savings and cost savings for people over the long term. So what they suggest is 5 days before your appointment, take 50 milligrams of zinc for each day for the 5 days before your appointment, and then for 5 days after your appointment, and stop. And make sure you have no health. Again, this is all like, I don't know,
Right.
personal health issues. Make sure that that's safe for you to be taking supplements. But you may notice that the Botox lasts longer. And a lot of people have been complaining lately that it seems to wear off faster. So a lot of people in my office, they say, oh, it doesn't last as long as it used to. And I don't know if that's because people, they're just aging and their wrinkles are getting stronger, or if the formulations are getting weaker, or if they're just getting used to it and breaking it down more quickly. So,
Well, but Melissa, don't you also break it down more quickly if you work out a lot and if you do like saunas? And I feel like with this whole move towards longevity, there's more people doing, cold, like to speed up it's almost speeding up your body and making your body react, right? The cold plunges,
your
the infrared, the
metabolism.
red.
Yeah, there's some people that say that the faster metabolism, or people that make more facial expressions, can burn through it faster. I don't know. It also just depends. Like, so I can say for me, when I Botox in my forehead tends to wear off very quickly because I'm very expressive. Whereas Botox in other places, like around my eyes, lasts longer. So maybe I don't make those expressions. So I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. All I can say is if this is true, not good for business.
I know. Not good for
People coming
business.
in less often,
That's
but on a
right.
consumer side, on a patient side, it's definitely worth trying. Yeah.
And again, like we always, this is kind of the Peter Lynch style of investing, who is a famous investor for managing the Magellan Fund for Fidelity. It's kind of like talking about products that we use and then relating it to a company. So in this case, who's the largest producer of Botox, right? It was Allergan.
Allergan, which got
So
bought by AbbVie.
right. So Allergan used to be its own publicly traded company, which was a great stock, and then it was bought. So what I'm saying in that case is that there's no, I don't know that there's a great pure play way to look at Botox, but that's another side. But anyway, it's just relating it all together.
So I thought that was a cool study that I saw.
But wait, Melissa, one question though on it. It's interesting because I take magnesium and there's citrate, and then there's one that starts with a B, and there's all these. What is so? And you just talked about zinc citrate versus zinc
Zinc glycinate.
glycinate. Yeah. So what's the difference? What does it all mean? Do we know?
Be honest, I don't know. It's just how it's formulated, and I guess the dose. And I don't know why the magnesium, sorry, why the zinc glycinate in the lower dose didn't work and the zinc citrate in the higher dose did. I'm not sure.
Okay. And whenever I take zinc, because during COVID, everybody was saying,
Immune
if you want,
system.
use zinc, right? But it always gives me a stomach ache.
Oh.
Like I want to
Interesting.
feel sick to my stomach.
Oh, so it kind of makes you nauseous.
Yeah. Have you not heard that?
I don't know. To be honest, I don't I've only taken zinc a few times.
Okay.
I've never really taken it for like an immune booster. Now I'm definitely gonna try it. When the next time I do my Botox, I'm gonna try it. And then I'll let you know if I'm
Oh.
nauseous and if it's worth the nausea for the prolonged Botox.
Okay. That's
It also
may
depends if you take it with food as well.
Yeah,
Does
I don't think I
it
took
on
it
an
with
empty stomach?
food.
Yeah, some of these things you have to take with, because if you take them on an empty stomach, it can,
Okay.
be great.
Okay. Let's also talk about emulsifiers because this was, it's interesting. Somebody mentioned that in some of the grocery stores, when you buy those roasted chickens that seem so great because dinner's made, dinner's ready, that there are somehow they put emulsifiers in that. I don't know how because it's just a chicken. I don't know if they're coating it or what. But so that then I saw the article on emulsifiers and sent it to you. So let's talk about what they are.
So emulsifiers are basically thickening agents. They add to food that prolong shelf life. They improve the texture, the feel of the food, and they're in a lot of packaged foods. So some names that you might recognize, soy lecithin, guar gum. I think one of them is like carboxycellulose. Cellulose might be one of the chemical sounding. These emulsifiers, and they're in everything. They're in even the healthy foods. They're in a lot of yogurts. They're in
Right.
Yeah, they're in some almond milks, they're in, crackers and cereals and protein bars and granola bars, and they're just in a lot of things. And so, people are saying these are healthy, there's nothing wrong with them, but what this article said about emulsifiers, they may not be as healthy for us as we think because they may affect our microbiome, the good bacteria that line our digestive tract. And these emulsifiers don't get digested, which means they go down and they pass through our colon, and in doing that, they could disrupt the bacteria that live there. So again, I mean, I think this all just goes down to we want to reduce the amount of packaged and processed foods we're eating. You want to have mostly whole foods, simple diet, and then the odd packaged food is okay when you're having them in that amount. But if you're eating all day packaged foods, processed foods, if that's the majority of every one of your meals, yeah, they're going to do damage. It can't be healthy. And you're going to see increase, they're linking it to increased rates of heart disease, diabetes, cancers. I don't think it's that, these things need to be banned. I think it's just that we need to be control the amount that we're eating. And we always blame this on a, is this, with Bobby Kennedy saying this isn't a North American problem, this is a US problem. But actually, the study that was done out in France that looked at, I think, like 50% of their packaged foods had these emulsifiers in them. So it's not just in the US. I mean, this is in muffins and anything that you want to be shelf stable. These are the products that's making them last and shelf stable, and yeah.
I know it's a bit shocking, like even to see that it's in some yogurts. Like you wouldn't think of that, you know?
Yeah, and Carnegie, that's another name you might recognize. So I love almond milk. The one I like is the Almond Breeze, and it just has like almonds and filtered water, and it doesn't have all these additives, but someone else was saying, showing me the almond milk that they liked, and their list of ingredients was so long with all sorts of these gels and, sorry, and these emulsifiers, and yeah, you don't need all that. Just
No.
keep it simple.
Keep it simple. Speaking of kind of, as I segue, simple, there's something I wanted to bring up to you, and it's simple and it sounds boring.
Okay.
But I think it's interesting and important, as we learn and get savvy, because people will start to, if they care, they'll start to hear these things in the news and what is it and why does it matter and does it? And so one of the things that came out this week was something that's called the Beige Book. Doesn't that sound awfully boring? The Beige Book.
Yeah,
Okay, so it's
it
basically it's a survey that is implemented or done by the US federal system. So the US Fed, which we talk about all the time because they set the interest rates, which affect us. It also affects the dollar, the US dollar, the Canadian dollar, interest rates do. And so it's a snapshot of the economy in the various 12, they call 12 federal districts in the United States, and they do this 8 times a year. And what's interesting about this summary, Melissa, is that it's more informal. It's not about statistics or economic data points. It's a survey that gets insights from business leaders and economists that covers the scope of things like employment. Like, are you hiring? Are you not? What are you doing with wages? What are you doing with manufacturing? How's retail sales going? What's real estate looking like? So it's an interesting economic pulse. Of the current moment, and that the Fed, the Federal Reserve, looks at and uses as it relates to what their federal policy will do at the next Fed meeting, what they might implement. It's not the only thing, obviously, that they're looking at, but it's one of the things. So the reason why I bring this up is because it is an interesting read. The most recent would have been from January and early February. And what I wanted to bring up as it relates to tariffs is that multiple firms were saying that multiple districts, I should say, are seeing that they will expect to raise prices.
That you mean prices are going to go up once these tariffs take effect.
Because there's so much uncertainty. And that they are
Or
seeing
the price of goods, you mean, because things are going to cost more. Yeah. Makes
I
sense.
mean, it's, yeah, it's not, it, this isn't brain surgery here. I didn't, you know, this not a new revelation, but I think it's interesting to take a look at something that's very well respected called the Beige Book and, you know, think about what they're saying. And therefore, do we think the US Federal Reserve will lower rates? Fed Chair Jerome Powell, he was on this morning. I haven't, as we've been speaking, I don't know what he said, but they are very data dependent, as we know. I think they'll probably do a wait and see approach in terms of whether or not they'll lower rates. I do think, though, that with respect to Canada, we might see the Bank of Canada continue to lower rates to help the economy, right?
I think so because our dollar keeps getting weaker, people are hurting, things are getting more expensive for us,
But the,
especially if these tariffs
yeah.
take effect. And so I can see that as well.
But the problem is, if they lower the rates once again, the Canadian dollar will weaken even further.
Again, further. Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. And that's because, so people can understand, you know, you put your money where it's treated best, where it makes the most money. So if you can put your money, if you're a foreign national and you can put your money in Canada and earn, let's just call it, I don't know, 2%, or you could go to the States and pay four, get 4% or whatever it is, you're
So what
going
do
to
you
go to the
mean put their
4%.
money in Canada? What do you mean by that?
So, well, buy government bonds, a good
Okay.
question. Very good question. So yes,
But yet
buy,
more people may want to do business in Canada because it's so much cheaper.
depends on the business, because the what we have seen over the past 10 years is you have seen so much, it's called foreign direct investment. So just think foreign dollars, but they call it FDI. You have seen so billions and billions and billions of dollars leave Canada because of the regulatory environment and how difficult it is to do business here. So yes, the dollar might be cheaper, but is it worth all the other headaches? And so many companies, multinational companies, have been pulling out of Canada literally for 10 years.
So, in relation to things getting more expensive here, I read an interesting article that was the title of it was like, Why Canada Goose May Get More Expensive, but Lululemon Won't. They're both
Oh.
Canadian companies, right? So, you would think that with tariffs on Canada, all Canadian, like the prices of these goods are all going to get higher. But they said that Canada Goose, which is like, you know, the jackets made from our,
Yeah.
they, 70% of the materials are from Canada and they're made in Canada. Whereas Lululemon, most of the stuff is made in Indonesia and Vietnam and in other countries. So the tariffs won't affect it as much. So it's just something interesting to look at because if you're thinking, oh no, with these tariffs, are all Canadian stocks going to go down? Are the prices of all Canadians going to, you have to look at where they manufacture,
Source, yeah.
where they source.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's something to,
That's interesting. And I'm sure that should be reflected in the stock price. And that's why, we started off this podcast obviously prior to the US election. And we this was so last October or so, and then we had a huge rally in the market. And you know what I said then, and you're seeing it more now because of all of these moving pieces and parts. You know, everything when we look at companies and you look at tariffs and federal, you know, the US Federal Reserve decisions and Bank of Canada, like it affects all of us. So I think it's just so interesting. You know, it's a story, right? We're living in a story.
Yeah,
And
it was a boring 4 years. I think that like with Biden, it was kind of boring. Like we didn't hear
yeah,
that much news. There was no social
no,
media. There's nothing to look at. And I think people were bored. I mean, and then all
yeah,
of a sudden with Trump, it's like we wanted a little bit more, you know, but it's too much.
it's a lot,
It's
it's
slow down, you
a lot, it's a
know.
lot.
Although if you watch Saturday Night Live, it's getting so good again because there's just so much material.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I know. I love it when I see the little clips because I don't watch it regularly. The one other thing I should just mention as well, Melissa, because you know, we're talking about okay, what do you look at when you're, you know, looking at the markets or investing, whatever. And of course you have to look at jobs. So the jobs numbers in Canada and the United States did come out today. It is March the 7th, is it? Yeah. Because we record this and just so people know. So Canada only grew 1.1 thousand jobs. One, so call it 1,000 jobs in the past month. Yeah, only 1,000. They were expecting to see 20,000 jobs growth. The United States came in, I think, 151,000. They were expecting 160,000. So, you know, a little bit less in the United States, quite dramatically less in Canada.
Yeah, but I thought the US is trying to decrease all the jobs. They're firing everybody.
Well, in the government, and
Government.
the government did see a drop of 10,000 jobs, so not that much. Really, relative to everything else. But anyway, that's just another data point that people look at in terms of looking at how strong or weak the Canadian economy is versus the US. So US, you know, I don't think we'll see a rate cut like we just said, but we might in Canada.
So let's move away from Canada and the US and let's move to Italy.
Ooh.
Let's talk about the Pope.
Okay.
So I don't know if you followed the news at all or whatever, but he's been in the hospital with a double pneumonia. So he seems to be doing a little bit better in the past few days, but he's been on oxygen and he's been hospitalized. And so some people have asked me, what is double pneumonia? So I thought I would just do a little bit
Yeah.
of that. So basically, double pneumonia is exactly what it sounds like. It's when pneumonia is in both your lungs. So it's not necessary, you know. People are like, well, that must be much more severe than when you have it just in one lung. It depends. If you have a minor pneumonia in both lungs compared to a very severe pneumonia in one lung, it doesn't necessarily mean it's worse, but it's not great. So what is pneumonia? Pneumonia is what we call a lower respiratory tract infection, meaning the alveoli, which are the air sacs in your lungs, get filled with fluid or pus. That's pneumonia, which is different from an upper respiratory tract infection, which you might have heard your doctor use, say, oh, you've got a viral upper respiratory tract infection. Typically, that's a bronchitis. So you can feel really crappy and you can be coughing a lot with a bronchitis, but it's different from a pneumonia. Pneumonia is when it's deeper in your lungs and it tends to be more severe and end up with people being hospitalized and can be a significant cause of death, especially in people that are immunocompromised or elderly. So what causes pneumonia? So pneumonia is caused most of the time by either viruses or bacteria, and a small amount of the time by fungus, but usually it's viruses and bacteria. And it's hard to know what's causing it, right? So the most common viruses that can lead to a pneumonia are RSV. You might have heard about that. So RSV, that tends to be a common cause in kids that can end up with them being hospitalized with pneumonia. And the flu, influenza, can be very severe and it can lead to pneumonia. And sometimes when you get a viral pneumonia, you can then get a bacterial pneumonia on top of it. Well, in terms of bacterial pneumonias, the most common cause is something we call strep pneumonia. Okay. And there are vaccines for all three of these things. There's vaccines for RSV, which is, there's vaccines for the flu. And there's also vaccines for pneumonia, the bacterial pneumonia, strep pneumonia. And it's really important. I think a lot of people had a lot of vaccine fatigue after COVID. They were just like, and I didn't mention COVID's actually another virus that can cause pneumonia as well. So those three, RSV, COVID, and the flu. And then bacteria, the most common cause is strep pneumonia. There's another bacteria called Mycoplasma pneumonia that tends to be less severe. It's known. Tends to cause more walking pneumonia. We saw a lot of that in kids. It can often get better on its own without even an antibiotic, although we still usually give an antibiotic. But anyhow, so some people say to me, well, oh, I have a really terrible cough. I will just give me an antibiotic. But if it's a viral upper respiratory tract infection, or even if it's a viral pneumonia, an antibiotic's not going to work. It's not going to be a magic bullet. So if you look at the Pope who's in the hospital for pneumonia, people could think, well, why isn't he just getting better with a antibiotic? It doesn't always work, especially if there's a viral component. So these vaccines are really important, and it's hard to stay up to date with the recommendations. I mean, even for doctors, it's hard. It's especially hard when the US has different recommendations than Canada, and the vaccine recommendations are changing. I just saw in the US, they recommend that anybody age 50 and older should get a pneumonia vaccine. So that's a really important thing that you should talk to your doctor about. And if you're younger than 50, between 18 and 49, if you have any health condition, whether it's asthma, diabetes, heart disease, smoke cigarettes, or if you drink a lot of alcohol, then you would also benefit from a pneumonia shot. And this is an easy one-time shot. It's not like COVID. And I think it's definitely something that people need to pay attention to. And I don't know. I'm assuming the Pope probably had his pneumonia shot and his flu shot. I mean, I don't know, but I'm assuming
Yeah.
that. And we've talked about this before. It doesn't mean that they're 100% foolproof.
Right.
They help.
So, it's interesting, Melissa. Well, my question, I guess, is, I guess we walk amongst people who have pneumonia, maybe or maybe not, because they're probably in bed. But like, is it just like, you're around somebody who has a cold or the flu and you catch it, or you don't, and you do not catch it because you are healthier, or is it
Your
so?
immune system fight. It might be that you came in, so you might come in contact with the virus, with bacteria. So if someone coughs or speaks near you or coughs on their hand and then touches something that you touch and then you touch your mouth, you might come in contact with it. And you're quite right. Some people will then get sick and other people don't, because your immune system will recognize what it got in contact and fight it. And if
Yeah.
it fights it off, you won't manifest symptoms and you'll be fine. If it doesn't, or if you're exposed to a larger amount of virus, so if you're around someone really sick for a long time, there's more of a
Okay.
chance. Or if you don't have, for whatever reason, you're run down, or immune system's not as good, or if you're immunocompromised, if you didn't have the vaccine, remember we talked about the vaccine is training for your immune system. The vaccine is going to help you fight it. So
Right.
you might become in contact with the virus, and a lot of people don't know that the vaccine's working. They only know when it doesn't work. This is the
Right.
thing too. Like, I had the flu shot this year. I didn't get the flu. I see patients all the time that are sick in my office. I also have kids that are in a million activities. I, knock on wood, I haven't got the flu, but I very well may have come in contact with it, but maybe the vaccine helped my immune system fight it off so that I didn't manifest symptoms.
Right.
But we just don't
And
know. We don't know when something does work. We only know when it doesn't,
yeah.
So.
Well, I guess I was just wondering how contagious, because isn't pneumonia really contagious?
Not necessarily. Viruses can even be more contagious. I mean, COVID
Okay.
was more contagious, right? So, what actually is extremely contagious, which is also in the news right now to segue over, is measles.
Yeah. Okay.
So, measles is airborne, it's very contagious. We also have a very good a vaccine for measles called MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. It's a vaccine
Right.
that kids get twice, I think once around 1 year of age, and then again between the age of 4 and 6. And that should give you lifelong immunity. And it's a good vaccine. It's 70, 97% that
Yeah.
you won't develop the get symptoms of this the measles virus if you take the vaccine. So it's a very good one. Whereas other vaccines are less effective, some vaccines are extremely effective. Now, in Texas, right now in New Mexico, there's an outbreak of measles. And they had the first measles death in 10 years in a kid that just happened in Texas. And they've got a very low immunization rate. You need about 95% of your community to be vaccinated in order for you to suppress the disease from coming back. And I believe their rate of school children was only at around 80%. And the problem is, when it gets that low, then you're going to start to see the disease again. And I know we've heard in the news, and it's been controversial, where some people say, yeah, well, it's only for kids that had pre-existing conditions or immunocompromised that get sick. But actually, this kid in Texas who died was a perfectly healthy kid.
Wow.
And that's what's scary. He just was not vaccinated.
Well, even for Melissa, for us adults, like I'm sure I have an MMR, but where in the world are those records? I mean, they're somewhere,
I
but
know.
I'm sure I have it, but like you wouldn't want to get the vaccine again, would you?
You could. Wouldn't do
No.
anything. Yeah. And that's an interesting thing that just came out with the pneumonia vaccine guidelines. It says if you have not been vaccinated for pneumonia after age 50, or if your vaccine status is unknown, meaning you don't know, give it anyway. So people are so worried. There's nothing bad that's going to happen from getting another vaccine if you've already had it,
And I can't even remember because it didn't exist when we were kids because everyone did get vaccinated, I
Yeah,
think.
they did.
Are measles like chicken pox?
So they're a
Itch.
lot more severe. It's a rash that tends to
Okay.
start with like a fever and respiratory, like What's the word? Like a typical cough, sore throat, respiratory tract infection symptoms, and then you get the rash, not always, but the rash. But the problem is, I think the stat is 1 in 20 people that get measles will end up with pneumonia.
Oh,
A lot of
wow.
it leads to pneumonia, and 1 to 3 out of 1,000 people will die.
Wow.
That's a lot. So if you line up 1,000, I always talk to people, like if you were going to get on, I always explain it to people like this. Let's say you were going to line up 1,000 people and say, we're going to shoot you. Three of you are going to be shot. Do you want a bulletproof vest? Would you say, nah, only three, I'll be fine? Would you wear the bulletproof vest?
Yeah.
Of course you would wear the bulletproof vest.
Right.
This is where I talk about the measles vaccine. You know, so it's like, so some people say, oh, only 3 out of 1,000 people are going to die. I'll take my chances. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, but.
No. But what is it? But are these must be conversations you're having with parents.
Yeah, but there's a lot, I mean, less so in Canada, but there's a lot more people, especially with like misinformation online. And there's a lot more people that are weary of vaccines and think that they may cause, you know, there's a lot of people that believed, even though it was completely debunked in the literature, that MMR was linked to autism. So there's a lot of
Oh, I didn't
parents
know
who are,
that.
yeah, and this is misinformation again, but there's a lot of parents who are very afraid of that. And so they're, and I get it, like that people are afraid to give a needle to their kid and they don't want to cause a problem. Sometimes, you know, you can make an, so they don't want to make an error of commission, but you can also make errors of omission, meaning by not doing something, you can also make a mistake. And so they're really working hard to get people vaccinated in New Mexico and Texas right now in
Wow.
areas. Yeah.
It's
And
interesting.
yeah, something to think. And even Bobby Kennedy himself, who has been known to be controversial about his stance on vaccines, even he's saying to people, the measles vaccine is important and go get it.
Yeah, that sounds so standard. We've been taking it for so long.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Melissa, just to maybe wrap it up a little bit, you'd asked me, you'd send me an article. And maybe you describe it a little bit if you recall on small on the importance of owning small cap companies, or I read it
Well,
briefly.
yeah, so there was someone you know, when we were talking with
Ian
Phil, who we're
Schaefer.
gonna have, oh yeah, and also who we're gonna have on, they were saying how, you know, maybe the S&P 500 and maybe these large cap companies are overvalued, and but maybe there's something to say for small cap. And so I sent you that article because I was saying, oh, this is
Yeah.
what this person mentioned. Yeah.
And I should say small cap just means, so it's market capitalization. So it's the price times the number of shares outstanding. I know that's a lot, but basically small cap just means smaller companies. Large cap means larger companies. Think the Coca-Colas of the world. And small cap companies tend to be a little bit more growth oriented. You know, back in the day when I worked at William Blair in the 90s, late 90s, you know, William Blair was known for finding these great small companies that were going to be growing and become large cap companies. So we covered things like, you know, Costco, I think, was one of the companies that William Blair even banked, if you can believe it. Restoration Hardware, I remember covering that company. Whole Foods was a small cap company back in the day, you know, so Walgreens was even a small cap company. So the idea is if you find a really great concept and growth story, you know, you buy it, the stock, and it becomes a medium-sized company and then a large cap company. So sometimes there's interest when you think about, you know, America and Canada as well. I mean, it's basically these economies are really run by small cap. By small businesses, right? That's why small business is so important. So anyway, so if you wanted to own small companies in the United States that are publicly traded, you can either figure out what's the next Whole Foods, what's the next Restoration Hardware, or which you can do. And there are, it's a real specialty as a portfolio manager. It's a real specialty to be able to do that because there's going to be many more risk factors because they're small. Their balance sheet won't be as strong. Are they really going to take market share and market penetration? So there's more risk. If you don't want to have a company specific risk, you can buy an ETF like we always talk about. So there is one, well, there's many, but IWM is one that you can look at just as an example.
Isn't there something like the Royce 500 or something like that? Did I make
Yeah,
that
I
up?
think that was in I think that was in the article. I haven't looked at that, but yes, there's I'm familiar.
I just read something that if you invested, so let's say you pay $20 for your membership to Netflix for the year or whatever, for the month, or I don't know what it is. Yeah, $20 a month. If you invested that same amount by buying Netflix stock in 2007 when it was a small cap, presumably you would have
Right.
on just, so you just took your membership fee, the $20 a
20 bucks.
month you're paying, $20 a month, and you just bought the stock, you would have made $300,000.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Bought Netflix early, but not that early.
yes.
Yeah.
So it's the power of, like, again, looking at a company like a
If you
Netflix,
know something
seeing.
great early, and yeah. Before we wrap, because I'm about to go on a cruise, I'm about to leave in a couple hours on my first Royal Caribbean cruise. Talk to me about that stock.
So I think that the cruise lines are interesting. I think that there's a lot of value, and you tell me when you get on that ship how much value there is, in particular versus even going to a resort or even a high-end resort. The stock is down 22% just over the past month because of concerns regarding consumer discretionary, or the ability for consumers to continue to spend. And I was just doing a little bit of reading, but just the underperformance is overdone, and that there's a nice, I think that there's a nice secular shift going on with people wanting to cruise. I think it's getting more and more on people's radar screens, and I think that the supply of ships is limited. I was just actually, there was a great interview with the Royal Caribbean CEO on CNBC just the other day that I was watching. So if anybody can, get that on their, look that up. It's worth a watch.
I own a cruise line stock. It has been my worst performance
What?
in my portfolio. I bought Carnival Cruise Lines
Oh
right
no.
before COVID.
No.
And then everybody was like, the cruise, remember the cruise was like the worst possible thing. You heard of these people stranded on cruises and everybody was sick and traveling through the walls and the food. Anyhow,
Have
not one of
you
my
made it back? Have you made it back, your money? No, I don't think so. Have you? You
No.
might. You
I
might.
might. I think I sold off some as a loss for my tax purposes. But anyhow, I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited for the cruise, though. It looks like great. And it sure looks like they're upcharging on a million things. Well, you can buy the
Are
drink
they?
package and you can buy the food package. And you can buy the internet package and you can buy the games package and you can buy this package. So the
Oh
drink
my
package,
God.
though, like it's crazy. It's like $120
Okay.
the drink package per day. I mean,
What?
$120 of alcohol per day, but I guess
That's
people do.
crazy.
Yeah, like who's gonna buy that package? And then if you all the adults in the room have to buy the package, so I would buy it if I could just share, you know.
Yeah.
But that means both people have to be consuming $120 a day of alcohol, and you know
And
they probably do.
it's probably not the craziest high-end alcohol either. So that means you're drinking even more volume.
I don't know, or maybe I'll tell you how much the individual drink is. Maybe they charge you like $30 for like a pina colada or something. I don't know.
Well,
But
take some
maybe you're
pictures.
right. Maybe it's like if it was a one really nice bottle of wine for 100, that's different, but I don't think it's that. I think you're
I
getting like,
don't think so.
no, I think you're having like, I think people are having like 10 vodka sodas.
Well, it doesn't sound like you're in the mood to buy another cruise stock, but you should ask the people like who work there. Do you like it? How busy is it? Is there an uptick? Like that. Whenever I go anywhere, that's what the first thing I do. I always ask people like, is it busy?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be busy on this boat, that's for sure.
Well, I'm gonna go skiing, and I can't believe how bad this hair is. What I want us to, it's awful. What I
Well, you
want
have to
us,
put the helmet on. Who cares?
I know that's the problem. That's why this looks the way it
And a
does.
toque, and it looks good.
Oh, that's awful. But I do want to, a friend of mine said, because that she sent me this thing, and it's a red light cap. And I know everyone's into the red light therapy. And this is like a souped up cap. And apparently it's been a game changer for growth hair growth. So
Yeah.
why don't we look at that for
We'll
next
look
time?
at that next time. We can talk about all about red light because there's some interesting studies I saw as well.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Have
Bye. Have a good
fun.
day.
Okay. Bye.